Hello, and welcome to Power Pros Podcast, episode 117. I'm your host, The Hoff, Chris Hoffman, and with me is this week's special guest co-host, Ethan Einhorn.
Hey, Chris. Great to be back again.
It's great to have you back once again. Glad you could be here.
And this is such a great time of year to be here to talk about Nintendo releases. You just get to the end of Mario, and suddenly there's a million other things to play on top of that.
Yeah, I kind of thought that things were going to be calming down after Mario came out, but no, there are a ton of games. We have another big new release from Nintendo. We have lots of third-party stuff coming out, indies and otherwise. And then, of course, we've just got other news coming in, and we have this week's big topic, which is going to be a holiday non-game buyer's guide.
Sounds great.
So there's a lot of stuff to discuss. Let's get right into it, and let's start by discussing Nintendo's latest major release. Came out just a few days ago, Xenoblade Chronicles 2 on the Switch.
Now, this is a game I am dying to play, but I had my daughter say, "Daddy, please, please don't buy this until after Christmas." So something tells me I'm going to be very happy on Christmas Day. So I'm going to just anxiously hear what you have to say about it to tide me over, Chris.
Well, I did get it as soon as I could. I've been putting in quite a few hours, and my experience with it so far is that this RPG is vast, inventive, deep, and beautiful.
Now, is it beautiful on the television screen and on the handheld?
Well, to be honest, I haven't tried playing it in handheld mode. I play most of my Switch games in docked mode, so I'm only really speaking from that experience, but so far, as a docked game, it's very, very pretty. As with past Xenoblade games, it has these amazing, expansive views, and the world is lush and alive, and it begs to be explored. I think the landscapes look phenomenal.
Now, I've heard it's kind of bouncy, though, as well. Like, maybe
bouncy?
A little too bouncy in the chest area?
Well, yes, somewhat. Not bouncy, actually. There are no physics involved, but it's true. The heroines, Pyra's upper body proportions, you might say, are pretty unrealistic. I suppose that could be distracting for some people, but, you know, most of us don't play RPGs for realism, so it's not really that big a deal, in my opinion.
Yeah, I've heard that it's not Senran Kagura distracting, but that it's still a little surprising for a T-rated game.
Well, the proportions are almost as ridiculous as Senran Kagura, but it's not something they're flaunting in your face all the time. For the most part, what you get is a very solid Japanese RPG with a lot of familiar tropes, but also very deep combat, tons to explore, loads of side quests, lots of collectibles, and several new features that built upon what was done in past Xenoblade games.
Now, expectations were really, really high on this. I saw a number of people, especially on...
Yeah, mine were.
Yeah, well, the past games were great, and there were folks on Reddit that were hoping that this would fill out a Nintendo 2017 trinity with Breath of the Wild and Mario Odyssey. So does it come close to that, or is it just a mild step forward for the series? Where would you place it in relation to the rest of the lineup that Switch has had this year?
Well, it's certainly no Zelda, it's certainly no Mario, and comparing it to the past Xenoblade Chronicles games, I definitely am liking it far better than I like Xenoblade Chronicles X, but so far not as much as I like the original Xenoblade Chronicles. And one of the reasons for that is the story in this game, and that was Xenoblade X's big flaw, I thought. It was a great game to run around and explore, but when it came to the story, it just wasn't there. And in this game, you know, they start off with a really, really strong and interesting story, and they focus on the characters right off the bat. You know, you've got this character named Rex, and he has, you know, something of a mysterious past, but, you know, I liked learning about him. I liked the bond between him and this Titan that he lives on. And then there's this mysterious girl named Pyra that shows up, and I'm even more curious about her past. And, you know, there's all kinds of betrayals going on. And that's always good in a role-playing game. And then this whole world that you're exploring, these continents that are on the backs of these living giant creatures, you know, that's all really, really interesting too. So they have some really, really great groundwork that's going on here.
That's really cool. And I think it's also kind of remarkable that we're able to get such a vast RPG within the first year of the Switch's launch. That's pretty unprecedented.
Totally.
This is usually a year two, if we're lucky, more likely year three type of release.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, when they announced it was coming out in December, I really didn't believe it. And considering the library we've had so far, it honestly would have been fine with me if it had fallen into next year.
Yep.
But we've got it, and, you know, I am enjoying it quite a bit. Not just the exploration, not just the story, but also the combat. It is like Xenoblade 1 in a lot of ways with the auto attacks and the special arts, but then you can create these blade combos. Blades are what they call your support characters, and they're tied to your weapons, and by chaining attacks together, you can unleash these special moves with them. And you know, then you can also switch out blades in combat, and each one has different skills, and it just gets continually more deep and more complex. And even though, you know, I've put in more than 15 hours so far, I feel like I'm still getting the hang of combat. I think there's still more for me to learn.
That's great. Yeah, I really did like the combat in Xenoblade Chronicles 1. Unfortunately, when I played it on the new 3DS, which was a pretty compromised version visually. So
Okay.
I really can't wait for the step up that you get here with 2. Also, I love the more cartoon style of this game. I know it's divisive,
really?
But I think it's cool. It looks like Skies of Arcadia to me. Every video I've seen has excited me.
Well, you know, it's funny because I think the backgrounds and the environments are, you know, kind of, you know, in the same vein and the same tradition as the past Xenoblade games, which are, you know, sort of a good mix between cartoony and realistic. But the character designs definitely are more cartoony, and because of that, I kind of found it to be a mixed bag. I thought the character designs were very, very distinct in the past games, and this, they just sort of feel a little bit more like generic anime compared to the previous Xenoblade games. Like, Rex looks like he's 8 years old, and though I like him as a character, just seeing this character that looks 8 years old with a 30-year-old's voice is just kind of weird. And as you were alluding to earlier, some of that you know, generic anime style does translate over to the female characters, where it's almost comical. And most of the time, it's not a problem, but there are just some times during the cutscenes where it's like, man, I'm laughing at this for the wrong reason. I don't think this was their intent during this scene for this to happen.
Yeah, that can be tough, and that's definitely kind of part of that Japanese U.S. divide in terms of what people expect from stories and characters.
And don't get me wrong, I like games with unrealistically sexy characters, and I also like games without them. I think both types have their place, but Pyra is just a tad over the top. Mostly, it just seems like a step backwards compared to the designs in past Xenoblade games. I will say I really like Pyra's English voice, though. The English voices in general are a mixed bag, but I really like hers.
So now, one thing that makes me a little glad that I have until at least Christmas Day to play this game is that I'm in the middle of Skyrim right now.
Ah, okay.
And so, of course, that too is a big, massive RPG, but the style couldn't be more different because it's Western.
Right, absolutely.
So what is your personal preference, the Western Bethesda-style RPG, or are you much more into the Japanese RPG style?
I am much more a fan of Japanese RPGs. I mean, maybe that's just because I haven't given enough time and enough opportunity to the Western stuff, but I definitely skew more towards Japanese RPGs. And, you know, they actually did take a lot of sensibilities from Western RPGs when they were creating the Xenoblade titles. I mean, the way that you have these auto attacks and things of that nature really seem inspired by MMOs especially.
Yeah, and I've heard also that a lot of the encounters that you have where you can see in advance that some enemies are going to be more powerful. In a lot of games from the Bethesda mold, you just organically grow at the same level as your enemies. But, you know, that kind of more traditional MMO style that you have in, like, Warcraft, it sounds like that's what they've chosen for this. Is that right? Some areas you just can't explore because the enemies are too hard?
Yes, absolutely. In fact, if I have any complaints about the game, it's that early on, it's way too easy to wander into an area where you'll be overpowered and completely destroyed by a single minor enemy. Heck, even when you aren't going off the beaten path, there are some special enemies that will just tear you apart if you're not careful. So it really pays to level up and get extra experience from side quests. One extra level can make all the difference.
Well, now this is one other thing that I'm a little nervous about with the game, is that I'm okay with a game that gets gradually more difficult, but if you're dealing with a bunch of different systems that are just very hard from a user interface level to understand, that can be frustrating to me. So how tough is the game to understand in terms of all of its systems?
It doesn't seem to be too bad. There are a lot of things to learn. 2 types of skill points to allocate, 2 types of upgrades for your blade characters, and this branching combo system that I still have yet to master, but I'm not feeling overwhelmed so far. Of course, one of my menu options is still a big question mark because it's not available to me yet, but so far, it's not too bad. Could the systems be streamlined? Maybe, but so far, it's not problematic.
Okay. And so also, when you have all of these big titles coming out week after week, how do you manage that flow? Are you the type of person who just is not so interested in finishing a game, and once the new thing comes out, you just drop whatever last week was and just start onto this? Or do you tend to just hold on and push through to the end?
That's a great question, and it varies game by game. I try to stay on top of all the major releases so I can talk about them here on Power Pros, but after I've discussed a game, will I keep playing, or will I go on to something new, or go back to something else? It totally varies. I still want to go back to Fire Emblem Warriors and the Mario & Luigi remake, and I still have a lot of moons to collect in Odyssey.
Yeah.
But I definitely do intend to keep going with Xenoblade.
Yeah, well, that's great. And again, I think that it's going to be exciting to have something as we get into January that has some real meat on its bones, especially since...
Yes, it has a lot of it.
Well, and we don't really know much about anything that's coming out in 2018 for Nintendo, so...
And we know a few things. We know about Kirby, we know about Yoshi, we know about another RPG, Project Octopath Traveler. I think we know about a few other ones. And, you know, we're going to have some Zelda DLC soon as well. So,
oh, that's true. I'm just saying we don't know when they're coming out. So
this is true. This is true.
That's the thing. I really hope that they can maintain that once-a-month cadence. It would be so cool if we knew that Kirby was January and Yoshi was February and down the line.
Well, I wouldn't be surprised if we had a little bit of a dry spell, but yes, if you are to get Xenoblade now, you'll probably be playing it, you know, for a good another month or two. I wouldn't be surprised.
Sure.
One other thing I want to mention about the game is it has some really, really excellent music. Almost everything I've heard in the game sounds fantastic. Some of the contributions are by Yasunori Mitsuda, the guy who did Chrono Trigger, and you know, they are very impressive. It's just an audio treat so far.
That's fantastic.
I should also mention that I picked up the special edition of this game.
Ooh,
yeah,
big spender.
Down the extra cash. Yeah. I told myself I'm not going to do these anymore, but Nintendo keeps making them, and for some reason I do keep buying them. And this version of the game includes a steelbook-style game case, an art book, and a music CD.
That's good. That's actually a really good deal. And does that give you all the DLC or not?
It does not give you the DLC, I'm afraid.
Okay, so that's on top of everything else. Well, again, it's a good value. I ended up doing the same thing with Fire Emblem Warriors, and I didn't regret it.
This, I have a little bit of regret. You know, the steelbook case, I feel, you know, it's sort of, I could go either way on it, neither here nor there. It has some great art, but it's kind of weird seeing a game on my shelf without a proper case or even like a logo on the side of the box. And then the CD, like I said, the music is fantastic, but this is only one CD with 13 tracks. And I feel like, man, if they had gone all out and included the full game CD, then this totally would have been worth every penny.
Yeah, that's really tough. You feel sometimes like you're getting the marketing version of the CD, not the complete full fat one that you'd get at a record store.
Yeah, and with Fire Emblem, that was a 3-CD set, so that felt really mean and felt like a great inclusion. But this, it just feels like you're only barely getting a taste. I mean, all the tracks are great. Again, I know I keep saying that over and over again. They're all fantastic, but man, just seems like there could have been so much more on that front. But the art book, you know, I haven't looked at it too much because I'm afraid of getting spoiled so far, but it is big and hefty and massive, and it is a full-size art book. It's not just some tiny little thing. And when I got this thing in the mail, I'm like, oh my gosh, I had no idea that this special edition was so big, and it is entirely due to that art book. So I'm not totally sure that this special edition was worth the extra $40, but certainly this art book does seem to be very, very impressive.
Yeah, I've always felt that with these special editions, Nintendo treats their fans well. I think it's very interesting, though, that they don't do it for their more mass market games. You didn't have a deluxe version of Mario, for instance.
Why? I don't know. That seems like such a missed opportunity to me.
Yeah, for sure. But then again, you have the three amiibos that come alongside that one.
That's true.
Little surprise that we don't have any Xenoblade Chronicle 2 amiibos at launch. That also seems like a missed opportunity.
I wasn't really expecting any new amiibo, but I thought at least it would have some sort of amiibo support where if you used Shulk from the Smash Brothers series, it would unlock something.
That would have been nice.
But no, it appears no amiibo support at all. Nonetheless, I'm having a very good time with this game so far. You know, I'm not really ready to place it in the upper echelon of Nintendo properties yet. And like I said, you know, there is a little bit of goofiness going on. There are some difficulty humps that I'm dealing with. But in general, I'm really, really enjoying it. I do not have any plans to stop playing anytime soon. And just the feeling of exploration in this vast, amazing world is quite remarkable.
So do you think it has a shot at being in your top 10 of 2017 list?
In my top 10, I'd say there's a pretty good chance.
Okay. That's definitely a good reason to go out and get it then.
I'm glad you think so. Let's move along to another new release, something that I know that you have been playing, Ethan, and that is the Resident Evil Revelations titles on Switch. I have not picked these games up myself, but I know they are ports of the previously released games. I would love to hear your thoughts and impressions.
Absolutely. I have played through Resident Evil Revelations on the 3DS when that originally came out.
Yep, that was a good game.
Yeah, and I played through most of Resident Evil Revelations 2 initially on the PS4 and then actually had bought it a second time on the Vita when they had a sale on that. Looked pretty terrible, pretty rough on the Vita, so it's really nice to get an upgrade here. Though I would forewarn everyone, you need 26 gigs of storage space and about 5 hours of download time.
Oh boy.
To get Resident Evil Revelations 2 to run on the machine.
Yeah, that one's only available digitally. I mean, the first one you can get in physical form, but as for 2, yikes.
Yeah, though, I mean, that being said, I would rather they do it that way than feel like they have to reduce the file size and make for blurrier cutscenes and all of that in order to fit onto the cartridge. So
that's true. It's a good point.
I can live with this. It is the first time I've ever had to clean out the fridge on my memory card, though. I have now, I believe, at last count, like 91 or 92 Switch games.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, so ended up finally having to put some, like, Snake Pass into storage for the time being.
Yeah, Snake Pass can stay there.
Yeah, I'm okay with that. Yeah, the interesting thing is that when you blow up something like Resident Evil Revelations to a big 55-inch screen, it can look pretty rough because, again, you got to remember this was made as a 3DS game initially. And I remember I played the 3DS version with that clunky add-on that allowed you to have a second analog stick.
Oh, that's right.
But it was really a treat to have this full kind of dual analog stick Resident Evil adventure in my hands. Now you have something that, of course, looks substantially better than that, but still, when you're now playing it as a big screen experience, the seams show. You can see the very low polys on some of the items that you're picking up. You can see that some things are just flat textures where you would expect, you know, something that is more robust in any kind of traditional game. Huh. But nonetheless, it's still scary. And one thing I love is the pacing and structure of it. It's designed for kind of short sessions. So you jump in, you pretty quickly finish a chapter. We're talking like, you know, 10 minutes, sometimes as many as 20, but never really more than that.
Now, is this the first Revelations or the second one?
This is the first, but both are structured that way.
Okay.
Yeah. And then what's nice, of course, is that once you finish a chapter, it's very much like a TV show. And the next time you start it up, they'll say, previously on Resident Evil Revelations.
Oh, that's right. I remember that.
Yeah. And that's really neat because it allows you to kind of pick the game up after a little while, and if you don't remember exactly what had happened, it fills you in. On the small screen, it really does look very nice, a huge jump up, of course, from the 3DS. And these are just really good back-to-basics Resident Evil games. They are flat-out better games than Resident Evil 5 or 6 were, in my opinion, and they are much closer to what you originally, you know, would think of as a Resident Evil game than RE7. Mm-hmm. So this is much closer to, you know, what you got with Code Veronica and, you know, Resident Evil 3. It's that same kind of feel. It's very much survival horror. You're not running around gunning down people with unlimited ammo.
Right. That's what I remember when the 3DS version came out.
Yeah. And it's a slower paced and moody and really just a nice game to revisit. It's also nice that if you want to buy them one at a time, you can do that for $20 each on the eShop, and that's definitely a nice option for people if they really want to just kind of take one bite at a time.
All right, excellent. Of the two games, which would you say is better?
Ooh, that's a tough one. I guess I really like the environments and the scenario of Resident Evil Revelations 1, but 2 does definitely look better. So, yeah, I guess I would have to say overall it's a push, but my personal preference is 1.
Cool. Good to know. Well, speaking of Capcom ports, there's another one I'd like to talk about that came out not too long ago, and that is the version of Apollo Justice Ace Attorney for the Nintendo 3DS.
Yes, and that is something that I would have on my machine right now if it was on the other portable machine.
Well, it is not. It is on 3DS. I mean, Capcom has alluded to us maybe getting an Ace Attorney game next year, but that hasn't happened on Switch yet. So if you are interested in some lighthearted, intrigue-filled legal action, 3DS is still the place to be.
Okay.
Apollo Justice Ace Attorney is the fourth game in the Ace Attorney series, and like its predecessors, it is sort of a visual novel type of game where you solve mysteries by exploring crime scenes, finding evidence, interviewing witnesses, and of course, my favorite part is discovering lies and exposing them by yelling objection into the microphone.
Yeah, that is really cool. And now that I think of it, I don't even know technically that you can do the whole microphone thing with the Switch. I don't think it's set up to do that, is it?
No, I'm afraid it's not. That doesn't seem like it's a capability it has. So, yeah, that's one thing I'm going to be a little bummed about when the series does make its jump over to Switch. But I will continue to enjoy it on the 3DS while I can.
Of course, yeah. And, you know, the split screen can really be nice for that series as well.
Mm-hmm. That's true. That's also very true. And for the most part, the game is very similar to the DS version. There aren't a whole lot of changes. Obviously, it does have stereoscopic 3D. It does have widescreen and higher resolution for the visuals that appear on the upper screen. And you can also opt to play the game in Japanese if you're so inclined.
Huh. Well, that's great if, say, you're studying Japanese.
Yes, yes. But other than that, it is pretty much the same game. And, you know, to be perfectly honest, even though I love the Ace Attorney series, I would say this is probably my least favorite game of the 6 mainline titles.
Oh, bummer.
I mean, that's not to say it's bad or anything, but it just had a very different feel from the first 3 Ace Attorney games. And, you know, it's funny, as the fourth entry in the series, it kind of feels out of place. But if you actually play it after the 5th and 6th entries, and then you sort of approach it as like a prequel, and it's like, oh, well, tell me about this character who was really cool in the 5th and 6th games, then it works great. Because in this game, Apollo Justice is not a great character. He's not a very strong character, and he's just sort of manipulated and bumped back and forth by all those people around him. And it makes me wonder what was going on in the creator's mind, Takumi-san's mind, when he was making this game. Because it's really kind of a depressing game. Like, the main character, Apollo, is manipulated by everyone. Phoenix Wright, you see him, and he's dressed like a hobo, and he's been disbarred and unemployed for 7 years. There's this detective character who was this, you know, really happy youngster when you previously saw her, and now she's like unhappy and can't get the job she wants and is just kind of always negative. And it's like, man, what was going on in this guy's life? And so while the game is good overall, it just sort of got this depressing feeling to it that is a little bit distracting or detracting when you're comparing it to the upbeat nature of the previous Ace Attorney games. So there's that aspect to it, and then there's the aspect that in Ace Attorney 5 and 6, Apollo Justice does become a pretty cool character. So if you play those two first, and then you play this one, like, oh, well, this is where the character got his start, this is his history, this is what happened, you know, in that time period between Ace Attorney 3 and Ace Attorney 5, it actually becomes a very, very much more interesting and fun to play game.
That's good to know. I would wonder, though, if you are a 3DS player, let's say you actually get the 3DS for the first time this holiday season, which Ace Attorney game would you actually recommend people start with?
That's kind of a tough one. I mean, you could start with any of the other games except this one, really, because that's the great thing is now they are all on the 3DS. You can
right.
get Trilogy, you can get 5, you can get 6, you can get 4. I mean, 5 is kind of like a new beginning, so that's kind of a great place to start. 6 is a really good standalone story, too, so you could start there. Or, of course, Trilogy would probably be the most obvious place to start, because you get, you know, 3 games for the price of 1.
Best bang for the buck.
It's a lot of content, and it lets you start right from the very beginning.
Sure, sure.
But, I don't know, maybe 5?
Okay.
I might go with that one. But, anything but 4, unfortunately, is probably a good starting point.
Okay. Well, again, it's nice to see that Capcom is still supporting the 3DS, and this has always been a unique and fun gameplay experience for core and casual players alike.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very much so. Yeah, I'm really enjoying playing through it again. I haven't really played that story much since it first came out almost 10 years ago. So it's really fun to re-experience that story and get reacquainted with those characters. And even if it isn't the best one, I am still enjoying it quite a bit.
How's the 3D?
It's all right. I mean, it's very layered. You know, you get the characters on top of the background and then the text on top of that. So it doesn't do anything really special with the 3D. And there's this one animation it uses repeatedly where one of the lawyers bangs his hand on the wall behind him. But because of the 3D, he's like banging into basically empty 3D space because the wall was clearly a ways behind him when the stereoscopic 3D is turned on. They should have given some depth to his arm or something. Yeah, don't buy this game for the 3D. It's sort of a nice feature, but, you know, it's been done better in many, many other games.
Okay.
It's a 2D game at its core.
Sure, sure.
Anyway, despite my complaints, I'm still having a great time revisiting this story. If you missed it on DS and you like the series, be sure to pick it up this time on 3DS. And continuing the topic of quality games getting new life as ports on new Nintendo hardware, I also wanted to talk about Axiom Verge. This game actually came out on Switch back in October, but the physical release was only a couple weeks ago, and so that's why I've been saving it until this episode of the show. And not only did I pick up the physical game cartridge, but I got the Multiverse edition of the game, which includes an art book, a soundtrack CD, a Blu-ray documentary, and a poster and map.
Now that is what I really wish that I had gotten. I'm so tempted to double dip. I had not played Axiom Verge ever prior to it coming out on Switch. I didn't know it was coming out physically, so I did buy it digitally right away because it was $20. Mm-hmm. And I ended up liking it so much that while it's hard to beat Samus as a character, I think mechanically Axiom Verge is actually a better video game than the original Metroid and, dare I say it, Super Metroid.
You know, I've heard that from a lot of people, and here's the thing about this game is that I like it a lot. I think it is awesome. I have played it on other platforms. I played it on PlayStation 4 a little bit. I played all the way through it on Wii U, and I really wanted to get a game that came out on Switch. And there are so many great things about this game. It has a lot of unique weapons and tools and a really interesting story. And I think the game is an excellent Metroid-style adventure in every respect. I don't get the, even better than Metroid thing, though, for some reason.
Yeah, I think it's hard to detach oneself from just that kind of nostalgia. But I'm saying it from the vantage point of having, just prior to playing Axiom Verge, finishing for the first time Super Metroid and Metroid.
Oh, my.
Yeah, yeah. And then also I had just completed the 3DS Metroid Samus Returns. Mm-hmm. So just going right back to back from those onto Axiom Verge, I was really surprised by how much I enjoyed the weapons in Axiom Verge, how much I enjoyed the level design, just the pacing. It felt just a bit more fluid. Again, it doesn't beat the visual style of these games, but it's kind of remarkable, especially when you consider that it was effectively built by, what, one person?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
A guy who was working, as I remember it, on like the EA Tiger Woods games and ended up breaking out to do his own thing at significant risk and then coming up with his true labor of love, which really does feel like an authentic Metroid game.
Yes, yes, it does. I mean, there are a lot of great things about the game. The story behind its development is really amazing. I really like that glitch gun. That's fantastic. It's something we haven't ever seen in a Metroid game. There's been nothing else like it.
Yep.
The drill tool was really cool also. And I love the grappling hook. Grappling hooks are always fun. And, we've had grapple beams in Metroid games too. But it's just a very fun mechanic in this title.
Yeah, definitely. And it just has these moments of wonder, these gigantic Geiger-esque robotic humanoid machines that are talking mm-hmm. to you. The one thing that I guess I don't love is the hero himself.
Nerdy I like his sideburns.
Yeah, I mean, nerdy computer dude doesn't hold a candle to Samus. But again, what can you do? If you made it a female warrior in, armor, I think that would just be a little too on the nose.
I actually don't have too much of a problem with the main character in this game. I do find him to be, different and unique and in that regard kind of refreshing. And, he has a very interesting backstory and, I don't want to spoil anything with the ending or anything. but how it all ties together and, you know, does tie into the character's, you know, history all works out pretty well in the end.
Yeah, I mean, it's just the other thing is this game's existence on the Switch, especially in such a beautiful deluxe edition, just reasserts this as kind of the definitive indie platform for 2017 and probably the next several years. It just seems like...
It certainly seems like it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm hearing case after case of indie developers finding that the sales numbers are tripling or in sometimes going 10x what they are on other platforms like Steam.
Yeah, it's a great place for indie stuff.
Yep. Yeah, we've been lucky this year. I still have Oxenfree just sitting there waiting to be played, and I haven't started it up yet.
Uh-huh. As far as all those extras go, the art book, I would say, is very, very nice. It's not massive or anything, but it has a lot of great content showing off the pixel art and the original concept sketches and unused sketches and showing how these drawings got translated into pixel form. The soundtrack CD, you can't really go wrong with that. And I didn't really have any expectations for this map poster that's included, but I thought it was a really nice surprise because it shows basically the locations of every item and weapon and boss in the game. So it's basically an entire walkthrough in a single, you know, poster form. If you're a newcomer to the game, I would not recommend using that because that takes away the fun of exploration and discovery. But for someone like me who has played it before and I can just reference this and be like, oh yeah, I'm on the right track, it's really, really great to have.
That's super cool. Yeah.
Yeah, it's some very nice stuff. However, the Blu-ray making of documentary stuff, which I haven't watched everything yet, so far has left me a little bit disappointed. It does talk a lot about the personal circumstances surrounding the creation of the game and a lot about what happened afterwards and a lot of things leading up to it. But so far, you know, it hasn't really told me about the making of the game itself. Like, I want to know what was going through Tom's mind when he was coming up with these characters and this world and, you know, the glitch gun and stuff like that. And, you know, while there is a lot of interesting things that happened to him, you know, personally outside the game, so far, just as a making of, it hasn't quite delivered what I want.
That's too bad. Is it just a production value thing or just the wrong stories being told?
It's the wrong story for me. It doesn't feel like so much a making of the game as, you know, a profile of this creator. And again, like I said, you know, his story is kind of amazing. And I don't know if it's common knowledge, but his child has a unique medical condition that has really defined him as a person. And there's a lot of emphasis on that. And I think that's really important to be aware of. But I wish I were learning more about the game itself.
Yeah, that I can understand. One thing I will say, his name is Tom Happ, H-A-P-P.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And the reason I think it's important to jot that down is that you should follow him on Twitter. If you tweet to him after you've played the game, if you really like it, he's actually very responsive, very personable, and I'm sure he would love to hear what people think of the game. It's just really nice when it's like a single individual who's worked on a game and they're so accessible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very true. And I should say, I haven't watched everything that's on this Blu-ray yet. I did watch the making of, and I've watched like half an hour of a 2-hour long interview, but there's also a speedrun video, and there's also like 2 hours of gameplay with Tom talking over it. So maybe my questions will get answered somewhere, but it just hasn't happened yet.
Okay. Yeah, it's neat that it's there. It is kind of a bummer that it has to be a separate Blu-ray instead of something that can fit onto the cartridge, but of course...
That's true, I guess.
From a space standpoint, you can't blame them.
Overall, though, you know, I think it is a pretty neat and satisfying package to have all that stuff in there for such a great indie title.
Absolutely, yeah.
Moving on then to another fairly recent release, the next one I would like to talk about is Battle Chef Brigade, also on Switch.
Yeah, and this is a game that we've been hearing a lot of different outlets talking about as a surprise top 10 game of the year contender. For very good reason, I think. It's just a beautiful game visually, and it's truly unique mechanically.
Yeah, there's not much else like it out there. It is a combination side-scrolling action game and cooking game, which plays out as a match-3 puzzler.
Yeah, it's not something where you can say it's another one of these. It's tempting to be able to say that when you see the screenshots because it looks like it's just another competitive match three. But it's so much more than that. And on top of the puzzle elements, I just really love the way the battle elements play out where you are actually hunting the materials that you need to be able to make the meals that the judges are asking for. And you have to be very careful about which ingredients you pluck from the wild because it has to have exactly the right mix of flavors in order to be able to beat your competitors in the contest.
Yes, and for me, that is what I feel is the game's strongest point, is going out and hunting these monsters and going through these 2D side view action stages. They're fast, they're fluid, they're well animated, they're beautiful. They kind of remind me of Muramasa when it came out on Wii and later on Vita. And you have a lot of cool moves at your disposal. And then, yes, you collect these ingredients, you take them back, and then you engage in a match three puzzler.
Yeah, and then on top of that, the storytelling is just great. I love the I love the heroine. I love that everything is voice acted. How often do you see that?
Yeah, it's got some pretty great voice acting too. Yeah, not very often. Not very often at all. Yeah, they went to a lot of work to have a great, satisfying story. It really reminds me of The Legend of Korra in a lot of ways. I mean, the main character, Mina, kind of looks and sounds like Korra. And, you know, the way she's sort of growing up reminds me of her as well. And then, you know, this emphasis on the different elements, you know, the fire and water and wind is also, you know, very, very Avatar-like. And, you know, whether that inspired it or not, I can't say. But there are certainly worse things to take inspiration from than Avatar and The Legend of Korra.
Yeah, I'm just glad that they took inspiration from the TV show Legend of Korra and not the Platinum game based on the TV show.
I still have not played that one.
Oh, boy. But yeah, no, this is great. And I also really love that kind of pencil art style. It just looks so beautiful. And that, too, makes it really stand out. It feels... the only thing I can really compare it to is maybe like Banner Saga. But, you know, I think that I like this art style even more. But it's just very expressive. And again, the whole package comes together as something that stands out from the crowd. I mean, you think of it this way. Again, while this is a terrific platform for indies, we are seeing a ton of indie games hitting, especially in the fourth quarter here. And when you can have one of these independent titles popping up and suddenly every podcast that you can download is talking about it as a top 10 game, has to be something pretty special if it's doing that.
Well, I do admit it is special. It is unique. I'm not sure for me it's a top 10 game, and it sounds like you like it a lot more than I do. When it comes to the visuals you just mentioned, you know, I really loved how it looks when you're out there and actually hunting the monsters and taking those guys out. But in a lot of the cutscenes, I feel it looks more like a storyboard where it's not quite finished. And, you know, big chunks of it are uncolored and sort of monochromatic. And something about that just made it seem like it could have been more polished to me. And that would have made it more enjoyable.
Yeah, I think it's very deliberate, but it does definitely feel less lush. My guess is it's probably for the very same reasons people often will choose that minimalist 8-bit or 16-bit style. It's something that looks good, it looks cohesive, but it's also probably something that works well within a limited budget.
Yeah, I have to agree. And also, just the whole match three puzzle aspect of the game didn't thrill me as much as the rest of it did. You know, the action stuff I love, but then when it came to actually doing the match three puzzle aspect, I just wasn't as into it quite as much.
Yeah, I can certainly understand that. It's, you know, something that is kind of methodical. It's not super fast-paced puzzle action. I still think that it comes together really nicely. And again, I don't think that I would have loved the game if it had only been about that match three mechanic. But because there's so much more on the table, it just all comes together as something new. Yeah,
on the table.
Pun not intended. Yes.
Well, if nothing else, it is very unique. There's nothing else like it. And certainly, I think it's worth people learning more about and checking out and seeing if it's right for them.
Yep.
So is there anything else you've been playing on Switch recently?
Yeah, I wanted to bring up a couple of games real quick. I just started playing a game called Nine Parchments, which is...
Okay, I am not familiar with that one.
All right, so it's from Frozenbyte, the guys who ended up doing Trine and Trine 2.
Oh, yes, I know of those.
And just as we were saying, Battle Chef Brigade can't really be compared to anything, Nine Parchments can be compared to lots of things because it basically is... another take on Diablo.
Okay.
The differentiator...
certainly worse things to copy.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. The differentiator here is that all four of the characters that you can play, and you can play local co-op, or you can play online, or by yourself, and it all works really nicely, you are all wizards. And so the mechanic is actually... more kind of twin stick shooter where you are running around and trying to use your fire attacks and your ice attacks and kind of Ikaruga style. Some enemies are immune to certain attacks but highly vulnerable to others, so you constantly are switching.
Makes sense.
Yeah, so that feels really good. One thing that's nice is that while there's no voice chat in the game when you're playing online, if someone is joining you, the game generates dialogue that would be relevant for those two characters to have as they're having the adventure. So that's kind
cool.
of nice, yeah. And the game is absolutely stunning. If you've ever played Trine 2, that too is a beautiful game. That's a 2D puzzle side-scroller. This game I actually like mechanically substantially more, but it's probably just because I prefer that Diablo experience. Not amazing if you're playing on your own. Gets a little bit too tough too fast, but if you are playing with at least one other person, it is really a ton of fun. It works really well doing it co-op on a single screen, and again, the experience that you have with other people online has been very satisfying as well. So if you're looking for that kind of Diablo experience, this is the first game of its type to my knowledge on the Switch.
Okay.
It's $20 and there is a demo that you can download now so you can get a taste of it before you actually play it, which is nice.
Okay, cool. Yeah, this game was totally not on my radar, but I will absolutely grab the demo and check it out and see if it's one I want to pick up.
Yeah, yeah. It's been on the Nindies, so that's, you know, something people have probably at least seen some video footage of this. But yeah, it's definitely worth checking out. The other one I wanted to talk about is one of the biggest surprises of the year to me, because it's a game that I wouldn't have imagined wanting to spend more than a half hour on, and I've put more than 10 hours into it in the course of this past week.
And what is that?
That is a game called Gear Club Unlimited. I ended up picking up a physical copy, which is exclusively available at GameStop. It's also on the eShop. $50 for a physical copy, and I believe it's $40 on the eShop.
Okay.
And it is a game from Eden Studios, which is the team that did Test Drive Unlimited, back on earlier platforms like the Xbox 360 for Atari. And it's one hell of a fun racing game. It is real cars, so it's kind of in the mold of a Forza or a Gran Turismo, but you know, it's much much lighter on features, much more kind of arcade style mechanically. I'd say that you know, if you like Ridge Racer, you're going to appreciate what this game has in store. What's really interesting though is I ended up playing it right alongside the free-to-play mobile phone game upon which it's based. And
I didn't even know there was one.
Yeah, that's where the game originally came out. And it might sound crazy to spend $50 on a game that you can get for free, but when you play them side by side and you see just how much better the game is with all the microtransactions removed, where instead of
I could imagine
because I mean it has the whole mechanic where you know you have to wait between 9 minutes to 9 hours for, you know, something to get fixed on your car or to upgrade your garage, all of that. Now, just with the press of a button, boom, it's installed, it's ready to go. And then you're just back on the track. It just feels so good. It feels like the optimal version of this game. And again, these quick little races that are really mechanically grounded. I mean, it just, you know, the power drifts feel really good. The speed feels really good. Just comes together to give you something that's perfect to pick up and play if you only have like 5-10 minutes. And what'll often happen, as all these games tend to do, is you'll play for 5 minutes and then end up looking at the clock and it's an hour that's actually passed.
Nice.
But yeah, I'd recommend it.
Okay, and there's really nothing else like it on Switch, so this seems pretty darn cool for that audience.
Absolutely.
Okay, excellent. One more game I wanted to touch on that came out, you know, a couple weeks ago, but we haven't had a chance to talk about it on the podcast yet, and that is Animal Crossing Pocket Camp. This, of course, is the mobile version of Animal Crossing, a much more limited version of Animal Crossing. You're not designing your town or designing much of anything, but you're fishing, you're catching bugs, you're collecting fruit, you're crafting lots of furniture, and you're doing it so you can level up and get the animals to visit your camp, and so the cycle goes. Ethan, have you been playing this as well? And if so, what do you think?
I played it for about 10 minutes. I wanted to see what it looked like. I was really curious about that.
Yeah, it does look good, at least.
It does. It looks great. The interface is really easy to use. It's easy to move around. The problem for me is that just as a gamer myself, I am so much more comfortable just giving them $40 or $60 and just letting me enjoy the game. The problem is I don't know when I'm playing this. Like,
I certainly understand that.
Do they want $20 or $200 or $2,000? I just don't know. If we can agree on that and just like not have to worry about it ever again, that's how I want to play. So I kind of just jumped in, saw that they were going to be microtransacting me to death, and just decided, okay, cool, I'll wait for the Switch version.
Well, I admit, I haven't really felt that compelled to engage in microtransactions. I mean, they do try to shove these leaf tickets down your throat with everything. You know, if you want to speed up how long it takes to craft something, use these tickets. If you want to go to the mine, use these tickets. If you want to create some special, really rare furniture, use these tickets. If you want the fruit to grow faster, use these tickets. However, that hasn't really been much of an issue for me. And before I move on, I would like to talk about, you know, the things that I do like about the game. I like that it has these goals for you to focus on, because that's something that Animal Crossing has never really had. It's just like, oh, you know, proceed at your own pace. But this does give you some goals to work towards, and I kind of like that. I also like the fact that there's no tool inventory to deal with, and I like the mechanic of catching the bugs, where you just, you know, sort of tap the bug and then, you know, tap again to swing, instead of having to, you know, perfectly position your character, swing the net, and then, you know, maybe mess up because you're off by a pixel.
That's a nice quality of life thing for sure.
Yeah, all that stuff is good. But, you know, ultimately what I discovered that was more problematic than, you know, these potential microtransactions is that I just felt like I was going through the motions. I was just catching these same bugs over and over, or these same fish over and over, or these same fruit over and over to level up these animals and then buy this furniture, and then they come to my camp. And then the cycle continues as I try to get more animals to come to my camp. And, you know, Animal Crossing is usually a very personalized experience for each player. You're creating something unique. Your town looks unique. The inhabitants are unique. And in this game, that wasn't the case. It felt like my experience was the same as everybody else's. If I visit someone else's town, they would probably have the same furniture and characters, because you have to create specific furniture if you want to make progress. And ultimately, it just wasn't very satisfying, and I kind of felt like the game was becoming very boring quickly. And I hate to say that about a Nintendo game and about Animal Crossing.
Well, the other thing that seems strange to me is it's just aesthetically weird to be setting all these things up on a campsite.
It's a little weird.
Yeah, I much prefer the idea of decorating an interior. You know, something that can look like a really nice house when you're finished. This just, feels like slummy to have all your stuff outside. It's like, I can't help but think about, like, well, what if it rains? You know?
Yeah, I'm just keeping a bicycle and a barbell out in the middle of this campsite. It's going to be rusting pretty quick, man.
Yeah, yeah. So, I am not so impressed by this. And I will always check out a Nintendo mobile game. I still think that Super Mario Run is much better than people give it credit for. And
oh, yeah, I still dig that. That's one of my favorite mobile games.
Yeah, and I continue to play it. And that's done exactly the way I like it, where it's like, you know, give you a taste, you like it, spend $10, you never have to think about spending again.
I agree.
That's what I want.
Yeah, me too. And again, I don't think the microtransactions are like ruining this game for me or anything. It's really everything else. So
sure.
Yeah, it's kind of a shame I weren't enjoying it a little bit more. I'm not ready to give up on it yet, but yeah, it's just not hooking me like I would have expected it to.
Well, I'll tune in and see what you think over subsequent weeks.
Yes, yes. We'll see if I'm still playing in subsequent weeks. All right, let's move on from these game impressions and discuss a little bit of news. Probably the biggest news of the week, of course, was the news out of Capcom that Mega Man is back on Switch. You know, we devoted an entire bonus episode of the podcast just talking about this stuff, because we have Mega Man 11 on the way to Switch coming late next year, Mega Man Legacy Collection 1 and 2 coming in spring of 2018 to Switch, and then 8 Mega Man X games in one form or another, coming out in summer of 2018 on Switch. That is a lot of Mega Man. I'm super excited. Ethan, of course, you were not on that podcast. What are your thoughts on Mega Man's return, and especially on Switch?
Oh, I think it's absolutely terrific. I think that Mega Man 11 is doing exactly what I want it to do, and leading into that with the Legacy Collections, both of them, is so cool. The promise of getting all the X games also is great. I just think that there's absolutely no question that the single best platform for these games to debut on is the Switch. That's exactly where I will actually take the time to play through all of these. And so I plan on picking up each and every one of them. I think that...
Not before me, man.
Yeah, I think that the value per dollar on this is just going to be incredible as it has been before. I'm really excited to hear that they have Amiibo support for the Legacy Collections. That's really cool.
That's interesting. I'm interested to see how it plays out.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, overall, I just think that this is the perfect fit. The only question it leaves me with is when you see things like this, once more, we need to ask ourselves, what does that mean about the viability of Virtual Console?
That is a very, very good and a very big question that I hope Nintendo will answer soon.
Yeah. So, you know, it's nice, though, because we can hope that you have some type of exclusive packaging. The Mega Man Legacy Collection for 3DS came with the gold Mega Man Amiibo, which was fantastic. I'm sure you have that one.
Oh, yeah. You better believe it.
Yeah. And so I hope that they look at that and say they have to one-up that with this package, because I'm definitely getting these physical.
Yes, I certainly will as well, if that's an option.
Yeah. Well, and that's one of the things, is I really do hope, especially Mega Man 11, they decide to make it physical, because I think there's a huge market out there. I can only imagine, having worked at Sega for 12 years, like, they must be looking retrospectively at Sonic Mania and thinking, man, we should have put that on a cart.
I don't know why they didn't, you know.
Well, especially since they had a retail package, that came out for it. Yeah, that would have been great, and I think that would have been a really smart way to make collectors happy.
Yeah, I totally agree, and I do think that Capcom will make collectors happy. I do see these coming out as physical releases. I really do.
That would be great.
Hopefully I'm right.
Yeah, well, and I hope also that this means that maybe we'll see Monster Hunter XX as well.
I hope so. Yeah, this was obviously just a big Mega Man live stream they had the other day, but they have promised renewed support for Nintendo Switch. Hopefully we'll be getting Monster Hunter. Hopefully we'll be getting Disney Afternoon Collection. They've indicated that an Ace Attorney game is coming to Switch. So, you know, have lots of good stuff coming from Capcom, you know, next year, it appears.
Yep.
Yeah, apparently it starts with 19 Mega Man games, which certainly I'm not complaining about.
Yeah, it's great news all around.
But speaking of other long-anticipated games, we finally got the news that Yooka-Laylee is coming out on Switch next week. The Chameleon and the Bat, they are finally arriving in 3D platformer goodness.
So now what I'm really going to be curious about is what the reviews are like, because I remember with Doom, the Switch game actually got a slightly higher review than the original Xbox One and PS4 game did, because as far as Switch releases go, it really does stand out. I think that it's, again, a perfect fit for Switch.
Yeah, it's great for the Nintendo audience.
Totally. I'm, again, a bit bummed that this is not going to be a physical release, because I would happily spend the extra $10 to get it on cartridge.
Yeah, me too.
I wouldn't even give it a second thought. That would just be something I'd love to do. But I'm excited that it's coming. I have deliberately held off on this until it came out on Switch, because that's where I really, really wanted to play it.
Yep, same here. I'm going to be happy to finally give this one a go.
I think I would even play Bubsy if it came out on Switch. So I'm a lot less discriminating when it comes to games on Switch. But you know, I hope it's great. And it sounds like they've taken the time to optimize it, and they've added a bunch of new things. So if this is the definitive version, that's terrific. I am going to jump in day one and hope for the best.
Yes, I'll probably do the same. A couple other games out of Japan that have been announced recently for Switch are Valkyria Chronicles 4 from Sega, and then Shin Megami Tensei 5 from Atlas. I guess that one was already announced earlier, but Atlas has, you know, confirmed it is indeed coming out in North America. There's no release date on that one yet, not even a year, but they have at least acknowledged that it will be coming to North America eventually.
Yeah, I know it sounds like I'm just incredibly greedy, but having Shin Megami Tensei come out is still not as exciting to me as if they had simply announced Persona 5 coming to Switch. I still think that that would be the best thing Atlus could put out.
Yeah, that'd be awesome too.
But beggars can't be choosers, and I definitely will pick up Shin Megami Tensei when it comes out. As far as the other release, Valkyria Chronicles, I love that series, and I played all the way through Valkyria Chronicles 2 on the PSP, on my PSP Go, and it's an absolutely ideal game for portable. It's just so perfect for that.
Yeah, I also really, really like the series, but I've never actually played it that much. But it's really enjoyable from what I have played. It is a turn-based strategy game mixed with real-time third-person shooter elements set in a fictionalized version of Europe that's set during a war between the Atlantic Federation and the autocratic Eastern Imperial Alliance. It's also got some really unique sketch-style visuals, and this version, Valkyria Chronicles 4, features an all-new cast of characters, and of course, it's the first time the series is coming out on a Nintendo system, so for all of those reasons, you know, I think people should definitely be excited about this game coming out on Switch.
And I'm sure it was a relief to the folks over at Sega in LA that they could announce a Switch version right away, because if they didn't, they would just be inundated with, when's it coming out on Switch? When's it coming out on Switch?
Yep, yep, that's always the question.
Yeah, so it's great. I think that it's the perfect fit, and I absolutely can't wait. It'll also be nice for them to kind of do a make good for the last Valkyria Chronicles game that came out on the PS4 and Vita, which...
Well, that wasn't Valkyria Chronicles, right? It was something sort of in the series, but it wasn't actually called Valkyria Chronicles, was it?
I think it was called Valkyria Chronicles. I think it had a subtitle, and it clearly was not a part of that series. I'm looking... Oh, no, you're right. It was Valkyria Azure Revolution.
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't play that one myself, but it didn't look that great, and from the reviews I read, it didn't turn out that great either. So I'm glad to see the series apparently returning to form with Valkyria Chronicles 4.
Yeah, definitely something to look forward to.
Mm-hmm. And now for something just a little bit different, I also wanted to touch on the news that there is Mario cereal on the way to store shelves from Kellogg's. It is berry-flavored cereal with marshmallow power-ups, or at least 1-Up Mushrooms, Super Mushrooms, and question mark blocks. And you'll be able to get it and fill your belly with it in the very, very near future. Could be out as early as December 10th, I believe.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to get a box of it. Our family has been trying to be healthier, so this is going to be the dramatic exception to the rule. But got to try it, too. I mean, you have to have some, right, to be able to speak authoritatively about it.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, I'm not a cereal connoisseur myself. And I admit the Nintendo cereal system from way back when was not, you know, number one on my list of delicious cereals. But hey, I will totally check out a new Mario cereal. Absolutely.
Yeah, I think that it's a clever tie-in. It surprises me, frankly, that we haven't seen more NFC-style support for unlocks in games. It's interesting also that they are calling it Amiibo instead of just defining it as something that will unlock content.
Right, I mean, that's the other thing about it, is that the box does act as an Amiibo.
Amiibo!
That is crazy and cool, and, you know, as an Amiibo collector, you know, I don't think it, you know, has to be a purchase for me, because it's not a figurine, but, you know, I want to get it anyway.
Now, I do wonder, would you have preferred if they had just a kind of cheap plastic figurine in the box as opposed to making the box the Amiibo?
Ooh, well, if they had done that, then it would have been like a must-buy for me. That would have made it even more compelling, I suppose, because I can't see myself keeping like a whole box of cereal around just so I can scan it. I'll probably just, you know, cut off a cardboard panel or something and have that around if I need to use it for some reason. But yeah, cheapo Amiibo figurine, yeah, that would have been awesome.
Especially if it was Cappy.
I was going to say it could have been Uncle Amiibo. That would have been appropriate.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, that cereal's coming out soon. I will definitely try some. And everybody else, I imagine you'll be looking forward to it as well.
Mm-hmm.
All right, that does it for the news. Let's take an intermission, and then we come back. We'll discuss this week's big topic, which is our 2017 Holiday Non-Game Buyer's Guide. We'll be right back. All right, we are back and we are ready to discuss this week's big topic, which is the 2017 Holiday Non-Game Buyer's Guide. And by that, I mean we're talking about gift ideas for the impending holidays, which are only a couple weeks away at this point, of items that are not specifically games. Presumably, if you listen to this podcast, you'd know all about all the games and peripherals that are out there on Nintendo systems, but maybe you don't know about toys or books or action figures that would also be great gifts for the gamer in your life. So we've decided to put together a list of a few of our favorites, and hopefully this will help you out choosing gifts for your loved ones or maybe getting some ideas for yourself.
Sounds good. Yeah, definitely a great topic to explore here.
So let's jump right into it. The first thing that I've got on my list of suggestions would be the Legend of Zelda Twilight Princess manga.
Ah, that's a really good one. Read in reverse, right?
Yes, it is read back to front, I suppose. Mm-hmm. In traditional manga style, there are two volumes out right now, with two more volumes on the way for next year. But yeah, you can get started out with the first half of the series. I have not quite read through the entire second volume yet, but obviously it is based on the story of The Legend of Zelda Twilight Princess, but also strays from the plot in a lot of ways. It delves a lot into, you know, Link's backstory, what he was doing before he wound up in the village and before he embarked on his adventure, as well as you know, lots of other bits of information that were not present in the game. I should warn, this manga, you know, is not for, you know, super young kids. It's definitely more at teens. There's, you know, more violence in it than I would have expected for a Zelda manga. But considering that the game is also rated T for teen, I think it makes perfect sense.
So is it considered canonical?
Oh, probably not. I mean, I would assume that whatever happens in the games is canon, but, you know, it's very interesting just to see the story presented in a different way and to think that, oh, maybe this could have happened this way. Like I said, I'm still fairly early in the story, and I don't really know everything that happens yet, but it's certainly interesting to read this adaptation. And it makes sense a lot of ways to change it, the way that they interact with characters and things like that, because, you know, you're not playing the game. You have to experience the story in a different type of way. So I don't mind the changes at all.
Makes sense.
Of course, I'm a big fan of Twilight Princess in general, but I do think this does an excellent job of adapting the Zelda series. And I think if you are a series fan like I am, this would be a great gift to give or receive.
Yeah, that's a great selection, for sure. And just really adds to the story that you already know and love.
Mm-hmm. So what do you have on your list of gift ideas?
So the first one I want to point out is something that you want to order pretty much as soon as you are done listening to this, because it can take a couple weeks to receive it.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, but it's the Waterfield SF Bags City Slicker. This is a $100 leather case for your Nintendo Switch, and I got that with the shoulder strap, and I like to call it my action satchel. I think if Indiana Jones was carrying a Switch around, he'd carry it around in this.
Mm-hmm.
It's a black vinyl on one side and grizzly brown leather on the other side. And it is absolutely beautiful. It has a set of leather holders for 5 cartridges.
Okay.
It has a inner lining that will actually wipe off your screen to keep it nice and clean.
Oh, nice.
And it has been very handy for if and when you end up taking some bumps along the road. I've fallen, I've dropped my machine, and everything has been perfect because it's been in this bag. So the City Slicker Waterfield SF Bags case is absolutely the best that you can get. CJ from Player One Podcast also has one and loves it. So I'd say that for the discriminating Switch owner, this is the best thing you can get that's not a video game for the Switch.
Okay, cool. And where would you get one of these things?
You would want to look up SF Bags. That's where you would find it.
Okay. All right, cool. Good to know. The next one on my list, obviously this is a great thing to have for the holidays, Super Mario Ornaments.
Oh, yeah.
I know we've talked about these on the podcast before, but you know, it's definitely something to consider getting if you haven't got them already. You can just walk into your local Hallmark store and pick up these very nicely detailed Mario and Yoshi Christmas tree ornaments.
That's really cool.
Yeah, they're really, really nice. There's also a Luigi ornament, but it is very limited edition. You'd probably only be able to get that at this point by resorting to eBay. However, there are also some cheaper Hallmark ornaments that are out there. I've seen them at Target. There's a Mario, there's Luigi, and these are only about $8 a pop, whereas the regular ones cost 15, 16 bucks. So if you want to add some Mario goodness to your Christmas tree or holiday display, this is a great way to do it, I would say.
That's great. That's a terrific suggestion. And that's the gift that we'll keep giving every year.
That's true. Year after year. What else you got?
So I want to throw a couple of board games onto this.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Super Mario Chess is something that would be a great selection, you know, especially if you have younger kids and you're teaching them chess.
Yeah, that sounds cool.
Yeah, really cute. And you have the good guys versus the bad guys, of course. And, you know, I would also suggest Monopoly Video Game Edition. Have you seen that?
I have seen it in stores. I haven't looked at it too closely, but I have noticed it out there.
Yeah, yeah. The only thing that kills me is that Ubisoft didn't end up putting that board on the Monopoly Switch cartridge, because that would have been perfect.
Yeah, that would have made a lot of sense.
But yeah, and actually, before I forget to mention it, the Mario Uno is something that I would highly recommend as well. They have special Mario rules and really cute Mario cards. So if you have some time in with the family and you want to do something fun, I would recommend those three board games.
All right. Very, very cool. And you know, if you are sitting around playing some Mario board games, I can't think of any better way to do that than while wearing an authentic version of Cappy from Super Mario Odyssey on your head.
That's perfect. Yep.
Yes, there is an actual officially licensed Cappy out there. You can pick it up for only $20 off of store.nintendo.com. You can wear it on your head and pretend you're possessed, or throw it on top of your favorite animals to take possession of them as well.
Yep, that's perfect. Actually, one of the best experiences we had picking up at launch the Mario Odyssey game, I took my daughter, and every single person working at GameStop was wearing one of those, checking people out, which was great.
Ah, very nice.
So next on my list would actually be, again, going back to the idea of everyone getting together at the table. I recently picked up for my daughter for Halloween, actually, in exchange for her candy, the Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild 1,000-piece premium puzzle.
Oh, very cool.
Which you can get that exclusively at GameStop, and it is just gorgeous art. A really good, challenging puzzle, and a lot of fun to put together and then have a legitimate work of art that you can glue together and put on a wall when you're done.
Very cool. That sounds like a lot of fun. Are there more than one design? What's the picture of?
Yeah, there is more than one. The one that we got was Link riding Epona.
Okay.
And he's bucking up like the amiibo.
Ah, all right.
But it's like a watercolor look. It's really, really lovely.
Okay, very, very nice.
What about you? What's next for you, Chris?
My next suggestion would be the Meta Knight Nendoroid action figure.
Oh, okay.
This is a great follow-up to the Kirby Nendoroid action figure, which I think was on our holiday buyer's guide list from last year. And like the Kirby, it has magnets on the arms and feet, so you can position them anywhere on the character's spherical body. So basically you have infinite points of articulation, an infinite number of ways to pose the character because of these magnets. And that is pretty darn awesome. It also includes wings and a cape. You can't use them both simultaneously, but you can interchange the parts to have whatever look you desire. It also comes with a sword and special sword effects parts that you can attach, so it makes it look like he is slashing with his sword. And it also includes two alternate face plates, which seems kind of unnecessary since Meta Knight has no face, but they allow you to have his eyes in just slightly offset positions, so it looks like he's looking to the side or something like that. But all told, it is a really, really great little action figure collectible. I love the posability. You can pick one up for about $50 or so on either Amazon or BigBadToyStore.com.
Oh, that is super cute. I hadn't even heard of that.
Yeah, I love it. I mean, I love the Kirby, and I love this guy pretty much equally as much.
That's cool. Yeah. Well, I have already suggested what probably is the most expensive thing on the list with the SF Bags suggestion, but I am also going to suggest the cheapest thing on the list.
All right, then.
For $4.99, you can get the Nyko Metal Kickstand now. I just received one.
And that's for Switch, right?
It is for Nintendo Switch. It is compatible with the dock, so you can put it into your dock without any problems. It's metal instead of plastic, so it is definitely a better device for keeping your machine stable. But the other thing that's super cool about it is that it has room to store one extra memory cart. So if you find yourself running out of space, as I just did, and you need to get a second memory memory cart. This is a nice place to store it right next to the one that you plug into the system itself. So for $5, it's quite a useful thing.
Yeah, that sounds awfully worthwhile, especially for the money.
Yes, definitely.
Very nice. Okay, so my next one is a music CD. It is titled Django, and it is by Chip Tanaka, who is probably better known as Hip Tanaka or Hirokazu Tanaka. He is the composer of many classic Nintendo games, including Metroid, Kid Icarus, Super Mario Land, and Earthbound.
Oh, cool.
And this is an original, all-new chiptune album with 13 weird, chaotic, quirky tracks. You can get it digitally or as a CD. It is available on Bandcamp, and you can check it out at chiptanaka.bandcamp.com. I like it for many reasons, not the least of which is a track by the fantastic name of Rad Moose. But the whole thing is unique and different, and if you want to hear some 8-bit-inspired tunes by a Nintendo legend, this is how you do it.
That's great. Yeah, that's super, super cool.
And I think it's something that people aren't really going to think of, you know. It's not a very obvious gift either, so that's why I think this one is especially cool.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. Well, something that you probably saw all over the place at your game shops when you picked up Splatoon 2 that I think is just a really fun thing to have is the Splatoon Squirt Gun set.
Oh, yes.
So they look just like the Splat Doolies and really would be fun to just have as collector's items. But again, if you have kids, all the better to actually use them during the summertime. It might be a little tough to get a lot of use out of them if you live in a snowy area during the winter, but nice to have anyway.
Yes, you get them, you put them in the arsenal, and you have them there and ready for those summer months.
Yes, yep.
Speaking of Splatoon, though, I think another great one would be the Splatoon art book that came out a few months back. Obviously, it is chock full of Splatoon-y goodness, character art, concept sketches, background art, all that great stuff. So I think that is a great option for Splatoon fans as well. Also, the Shovel Knight art book came out recently, and I think that would be also great for video game fans. Lots of good content in that one, too.
Yeah, and speaking of art books, I did want to bring up something that I got recently that I absolutely love, which is The Legend of Zelda Art and Artifacts.
Yes, I have that as well, and it is fantastic.
It really is. It is a chronicle of all of the beautiful art from all the different eras of Zelda. And what's so nice about it is that the art styles have changed so much over the years. It's really neat to see side by side the art from the original Zelda versus Wind Waker versus Twilight Princess, and of course into Breath of the Wild. They even have full pages on all the pixel art, which is beautiful.
Yeah, there's lots of good stuff in that book. There are lots of great art books out there. We're kind of living in, you know, a really blessed time for video game fans in that there are so many more art books coming out in North America. There were those two that I just mentioned, but I have to say, the Legend of Zelda book, Art and Artifacts, is probably the number one out there on my personal list.
Yeah, it's great, and it stands the test of time, and it is the perfect complement to giving someone Breath of the Wild.
I suppose that's true. Mm-hmm.
So the one other thing I would suggest, you know, it can always be tough to suggest things that are no longer being made, mm-hmm. but, you know, you should give an eBay or Amazon check for the Nintendo Vans shoes, if you can get ones in your size that are new, because those are absolutely terrific. You have shoes that have, like, the Zelda 8-bit art, you know, on top of, you know, the tops, and on the bottom they say game over. Super cute. And you also have, from Uniqlo, a set of designer shirts that are kind of abstract Nintendo art. We picked up for my daughter a shirt that was just colorful paint splats, roughly in the shape of a squid with two eyes, and it doesn't even say Splatoon on it or anything. It's just one of those cool shirts that's barely branded, but just enough to where, mm-hmm. if you know what it is, you know what it is. And, you know, it's really, really cool. So, again, look up Van Shoes and Uniqlo shirts.
All right. Very nice. Sounds pretty cool.
And that's it for me.
That does it for me as well. So, yeah, hopefully those lists have given you all some ideas of things that you could get the video gamer in your life. Or, again, maybe just something you can jot down on a little list and pass along to your loved ones.
Absolutely.
And I guess that brings this big topic to a close. And I guess that means we should be wrapping up this episode.
Okay, sounds good.
But, you know, I think before we go, we do have time for one more thing. And that is a dramatic reading.
Let's have it.
Once again, we are continuing the adventures of Captain Nintendo from the pages of Nintendo Power magazine. Previously, an explosion at Nintendo headquarters caused Nintendo employee Brett Randles to gain special powers and become Captain Nintendo, but it also brought Mother Brain and Ganon to life. Now Captain Nintendo, along with his Nintendo co-workers Morgana, Terra, and Max, and Link from The Legend of Zelda, are battling the forces of evil in Nintendo HQ. And so, the saga continues. Max dashed behind the Darknut, raised his fists high over his head, and brought them down full force. Without a sound, it vibrated and vanished, though a faint cry emanated from the Mother Brain. Terra and Morgana sank on the stairs, sighing with relief, while Max collapsed completely near the reception desk. "Grarg!" Ganon bellowed, his eyes wide and glowing red like volcanic embers. "Oh no, Dodongo Breath's back," Emerald alerted. "And the Brain is pouring all her remaining energy directly into him." As suddenly as before, Ganon disappeared. "Don't be fooled, Link," said Captain Nintendo. "He's still here, somewhere." Link wasted no time and struck out in the direction of Ganon's last location. Bingo! On the first swipe, the sword connected hard against Ganon's thick hide. Stunned, he became visible for a few moments as the Mother Brain quivered and shrieked. Brett fired another silver laser blast, but the giant vanished too quickly. "He seems to weaken when he comes into contact with something silver," said Brett. "Do you have anything made of silver?" Link considered and then shook his head. "Brett," cried Morgana, "try my letter opener. It's pure silver." I hardly even know what was going on there. That was just chaos and nonsense.
Yeah, that's absolutely nuts. It's shocking that that is in what is technically an official Nintendo publication.
And the future may hinge on a Nintendo receptionist's letter opener.
That's right. Stranger things have happened in history, I'm sure, but not by much.
We'll just have to continue these exciting adventures and see how it all unfolds in the next episode.
I can't wait.
Anyway, that does it for this week. As always, you can find us at powerpros.podbean.com, and you can follow us at PowerProsPod on both Facebook and Twitter. You can follow me, The Hoff, on Twitter at ChrisTheHoff, and you can find Ethan at Ethan_Einhorn. You can email us at powerprospod@gmail.com, and of course, if you like the podcast, it would be great if you would give us a rating on iTunes. Thanks for listening, everybody. For myself, Ethan Einhorn.
Thanks, man.
And the goddess Palutena,
you shall be purified.
We will see you next time.